Welcome to the Issue Is Podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. Next week's going to be a huge week for California politics. We're really going to be at the center of the political world. Donald Trump is coming to Anaheim for the California Republican Convention. He's going to be speaking there at lunch. Then we're going to have Ron DeSantis speaking at dinner. Tim Scott speaking there. Vivek Ramaswamy speaking there. And all the candidates, except for Donald Trump, are going to be at the Republican debate on Wednesday night at the Reagan Library. On top of that, there's other events happening in Los Angeles. Andrew Yang's going to be here. There's all sorts of stuff happening. And there could be a government shutdown in the middle of it with California's own Speaker Kevin McCarthy potentially having to deal with that. So we thought, with all that happening, why don't we bring together some of the smartest people we know to try to figure it out, explain what's happening, explain why everything's happening and what's going on with the Republican Party. And also this crazy week for Gavin Newsom heading to New York and going to the UN and the Clinton Global Initiative and being on 60 Minutes and CNN and all these different places as well. So we've got a great panel with us to break it all down. Lynn Vavreck is a professor at UCLA. She's also a contributor to the New York Times, written a bunch of books on politics. Dan Schnur, my former professor at USC. He also teaches at UC Berkeley and Pepperdine. He's all over the place with his commentary. They've both known each other for a long time, very well respected in the field. So we brought them together to break down first the Republicans and then to break down the Democrats. Let's start with the Republicans.
Great to see both of you. Welcome back to The Issue.
Thanks so much, Alex.
Yeah, thanks, Alex.
All right, Lynn, let's start with you. You get to get into the why. We know that Trump is ahead by a lot in the Republican Party. His lead continues to grow. Why is that?
I think we should not overcomplicate it. People like him. That is the simplest answer to why is he so far ahead. He's not the incumbent president, but he is a past president. This is likely to be super unusual. Two people who have been president running against each other, if things work out the way it looks. So he's a past president. He's got a lot of support built up from that time in office. And now he's the champion of his supporters because he's fighting a legal battle for them. That's sort of how they see it. So he's popular.
And you think that that has helped him? The legal battle.
Well, I mean, I don't think he would wish it if he were wishing for the perfect scenario, but I don't think it has hurt him.
We were just looking at video, Dan, of Trump. He's doing a lot more retail politics this time, out like interacting with people. What do you make of his lead right now?
Well, I think there's a couple things going on here, and Lynn, not surprisingly, is exactly right, that for all practical purposes, he is the incumbent in this race for Republicans. We're not used to this. It's been more than a century since a former president sought the office again after leaving office. But if you are a loyal Republican, he's still your president. And so
Of them believe that he won the last time.
Well, that's right, which right? intensifies it even further. But just as incumbent presidents very rarely face serious primary challenges when they're running for re-election immediately, just think of this as a re-election campaign, at least in the Republican primary for Trump, albeit one with its four-year time delay.
Although it didn't look like it was going to be that easy about a year ago. Ron DeSantis was at 41% in New Hampshire at the top of the polls there. But there was a new poll that came out this week that shows that he's now in fifth place. So this is the Republican primary. Donald Trump at 39%. The next four people all essentially in a statistical dead heat within the margin of error. You see Vivek Ramaswamy, Nikki Haley, Chris Christie. You have to go to the next page, and that's where you see Ron DeSantis at 10%. Tim Scott, Mike Pence, Doug Burgum all behind. Dan, what happened to Ron DeSantis, who was supposed to be the hope, the alternative to Donald Trump?
Well, one of the great things about being a professional backseat driver is we get to second guess after the fact. And in retrospect, it looks like there was a wide open opportunity for DeSantis, and he let it pass. Right after the midterms last year, Trump's candidates pretty much around the country had really flailed. DeSantis had been reelected in what was once a swing state of Florida by an immense margin. And Republican primary voters were interested in him and excited in him. Mm-hmm. And DeSantis and his advisors then made what now looks to be a profound strategic error. They decided that rather than getting into the race right away and confronting Trump directly, given the wind at his back, they waited. And by waiting months for him to finish his legislative session in Florida, they not only lost that momentum, they lost a lot of interest. And all that was left months after his very large reelection victory was Ron DeSantis and his personality. And that doesn't seem to be enough to be sustaining him right now.
Well, it's interesting. We had a while ago, we had James Carville on the show, and he said sometimes you got to actually see somebody run. You're not a candidate basically on paper. You got to see what they look like out there. And
that's
voters don't seem to be
true.
Liking the look, at least so far.
People complain about the campaigns, but they serve a purpose. Testing the mettle of a candidate. Can this person actually physically do the job? Are they mentally sharp enough to be here and there and then somewhere else and then get up the next day and do it all over again? The job is harder than the campaign. And so you want to see them performing well during the campaign. And the other thing I just want to say about the DeSantis slide is many years ago, Dan said something to me that I have never forgotten. And I'm going to paraphrase it and probably get it wrong, so you'll correct me. But it's something like, it was when Sarah Palin had been named and nobody knew who she was. And you and I happened to be together at UCLA and you said to me, it's a big night for her, that convention speech. Because candidates never get a second chance to introduce themselves to the entire electorate. Like, you can't undo it once you've introduced yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you think back to that moment, like, she really did. That speech, people still remember it as a remarkable moment. The DeSantis moment where everyone's interested in him, is this the future of the party? And then nothing, a void. And so we don't remember what that was.
Mm. And to be fair, I took a cheap shot at Governor DeSantis because, in fact, if you were a conservative Republican, he has been an extremely successful governor. But nobody, no political leader, is good at everything. And DeSantis, despite the very solid policy chops that intrigued so many conservatives, let's agree he has the on-the-stump skills of maybe Hillary Clinton.
And he's, I think, I don't know if you guys agree with me on this, but I think in the beginning, he was trying to figure out where the balance is between running against Trump
right.
and trying to adopt Trump's supporters. And how do you do that? How do you get the supporters without distinguishing yourself so much from Trump.
And nobody's been able to pull that off in any of the elections against him so far. And now there's a big opportunity that next week. Donald Trump's going to be here at the Republican convention in Anaheim. He's not going to the GOP debate in Simi Valley 2 days earlier, but everybody else is going to be there. We're going to be there. So they're all going to be on the stage, Ron DeSantis, everybody else. What is the strategy for them? What are they trying to do on Wednesday night?
Well, I would say thing number one, if you're one of those folks on the debate stage, more than likely most Americans know nothing about you. Mm. And so this is my name, say it over and over again, this is who I am. And then if you're lucky, a little bit about your credentials and experience. And if you're really lucky, you get a moment like Nikki Haley had in the first debate where you get to say something unexpected that generates a lot of attention. So those would be the things I think to do. And then the second thing I would say is do no harm. So do not leave. If you're at 6%, you don't want to say something that ends up leaving you at 2%.
So I think one of the things the Republicans are doing very well here is the way they're gradually winnowing the debate stage. When there's 8-10 candidates on the stage for a debate, it's not really a debate. It's more of a spelling bee. You know, you take your turn and you go around in circles. Now we're down to half a dozen candidates on stage, and they're going to get more of a chance to deliver their messages. I'll offer you three people in particular to watch. Yep. Watch Haley, because she was judged to have succeeded in the first debate, and her poll numbers have gone up. There's going to be a target on her back. Mm. Number two, her fellow South Carolina leader, Tim Scott, who stayed somewhat restrained in the first debate, was widely criticized for that. The question for Scott, because he was being looked at just a few weeks ago, is a possible DeSantis replacement as a Trump alternative. We'll see if he comes out with guns blazing or if he maintains this attitude. And then third, DeSantis, who had a fairly subdued first debate also. His advisor's spin was that he was above the fray. Well, when you're in fifth place, you're not above the fray. You're in the fray. Mm. And so the question for him is whether he engages more forcefully than he did in the first debate. Lastly, Alex, though, most important thing in this debate is the opportunity that Donald Trump has provided the rest of the field in his interview last Sunday, in which he talked about the
abortion.
Supreme Court's overturn of Roe versus Wade. And he's come under some heavy criticism in the party for that statement. I suspect, while in the last debate, Chris Christie was really the only, and maybe Hutchinson was really the only Republicans to say anything all that critical about Trump, there'll be a much stronger response to those statements from the people on stage. We'll see if any of it sticks.
Although Donald Trump may be more in line with the general election on that issue of abortion than the Republican base are, because maybe Trump is starting to think about the general election with a lead of that much. Okay, so if it's not Trump, who is the most likely person right now to be the Republican nominee?
Wow. Like, how much money are we betting on this? How sure do I have to be of my answer?
I'll put a quarter on this. No question.
Okay, a quarter.
Yeah. Let's
see. If for some reason it's not Trump, I mean, I still think DeSantis has the high name recognition and a lot of attention on him. So you can't discount that, even given the poll result that we just showed. But I just have a good inkling about Nikki Haley. I think the authenticity of her statement to women and that path forward, I think there's something there.
So if we'd done this, had this conversation 3 months ago, we would have said DeSantis. If we'd had this conversation a month ago, we might have said Tim Scott. Today we're saying Nikki Haley. And what tends to happen in the last few months before the Iowa caucuses is everybody gets a turn of being the candidate of the hour. And so far, none of them have grabbed onto that. We'll see who does. How's that for a cop-out?
Okay, I love it.
Okay, after talking about what's happening in the Republican Party, now let's delve into what's going on in the Democratic Party. And we'll start with some sound from the Attorney General of California.
This is California saying enough is enough. We're going to hold you accountable.
California Attorney General Rob Bonta talking with us earlier this week about California suing the biggest oil companies, claiming they knew about climate change for decades and lied about it. Back with our panel, political scientist Dan Schnur and Lynn Vavreck. So we know that Governor Newsom went to New York. He talked about this lawsuit. He was at the UN. He was at the Clinton Global Initiative. He was on CNN. He was on News Nation. He's on 60 Minutes this week. Clearly, he thinks this is a big issue. Is this a political winner? Do actual regular people care about this sort of thing?
Well, Gavin Newsom has made it clear to you and many other people, Alex, that he has never, ever, ever, ever thought about running for president.
Ever. Not even thought about it.
But if he ever did think about it, this is the type of thing that would be of great help to him. But he hasn't.
Yeah.
But what I would say is, even if, jokes aside, even if he were, for whatever the reason, not to run for president, not next year, not in 2028, not in the future, these issues still help him here at home. Because first of all, there isn't a California statewide media, present company accepted. And so it's hard for a California elected official to get attention across their entire constituency the way they can in a smaller state. Second, he's dealing with a lot of contentious issues in Sacramento, housing, homelessness, education, energy. And so by going on the national stage, he can remind California Democrats back here why they like him, even if they're mad at him on something else.
Meaning that people agree that the climate is an issue, even if they disagree about the way that he's handling homelessness, for example, although he's talking about that this weekend on 60 Minutes. I mean, clearly, he's putting himself out there on the global stage.
I think he definitely has a vision of the leader who he wants people to see, and not just California voters, people all over the world. And a lot of politicians don't have that, and I think that's kind of great.
So what is that vision?
Well, I mean, again, I'm looking at it like everyone else as a constituent, but I think that he is carving out this space where he will be able to say, so it goes something like this. Like, back in the day, California was the land of dreams. You know, go west, follow your dreams. You might be able to make it here. And then now there are attacks from the right. Look at what has happened to California. It's a disaster. Show images of, you know, all the things in California that voters know we're struggling with. And now he's sort of trying to say, this is still a great place. And we have led on all of these things from the 1950s forward. We're a leader in entertainment, in arts, and blah, blah, blah. And now we're going to lead on the toughest social problems facing this country and, quite frankly, the world. And who's going to do that? Your leaders in Washington aren't. California's going to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's kind of genius if you really stick with it and can pull it off. But Dan is the professional on this, so I don't know. Is that crazy?
I don't know. Governor Vavreck's message sounded pretty good, I have to say. But I'd offer you this really quick, Alex. The other place where this benefits Gavin Newsom, even if he doesn't run for president, is in comparison with Joe Biden. He's younger. He's more energetic. He's more on message. And most importantly, he doesn't have to deal with Rust Belt swing voters and political cross currents the way Biden is. So particularly to Democratic Party loyalists, Newsom can be the candidate of their dreams, even if he isn't a candidate.
Interesting. Meanwhile, you know, there's a talk about another Californian, Vice President Kamala Harris, and there was this clip of another Californian, Nancy Pelosi, on CNN talking about Harris. It's gone viral. Here's her with Anderson Cooper.
Is Vice President Kamala Harris the best running mate for this president?
He thinks so, and that's what matters.
Do you think she is the best running mate, though?
She's the Vice President of the United States. So people say to me, well, why isn't she doing this or that? I said, because she's the Vice President. That's the job description.
May not see that in her campaign billboards. Vice President does nothing. When Governor Newsom was asked about it, he had a different tone with Dana Bash on CNN.
Of course she is. The Biden-Harris administration, masterclass in terms of performance. Bipartisan.
There's a lot going on there, right behind the scenes with everybody involved.
Well, let's start with Pelosi. Whether you love Nancy Pelosi or hate her, let's agree that she never, ever, ever does or says anything by accident.
Yes. That very was, disciplined, that, unlike other people. Yeah.
That was very intentional on her part, and she was very, very intentionally sending a message that there are still significant doubts within Democratic Party circles about Harris. Now, to be fair to the vice president, this isn't all her fault. I don't think that the Biden White House has ever figured out quite how to use her. Making her in charge of the border was almost mean. Imagine, by contrast, the day after the Dobbs decision, the day after the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, suppose Joe Biden had gone on national television and said, I'm appointing Vice President Harris as this administration's, this country's point person on abortion rights, legally, politically, constitutionally. People would be throwing rose petals at her feet right now. That's not where she is. And Pelosi sent that message.
And instead, this week, they put her in charge of gun violence prevention, another thing that Washington has not been able to figure out in decades on what to do. Lynn, usually the vice president doesn't matter in an election, but usually we don't have a president that would be 86 if he served out a second term. Is she, and you look at the data, because you look at the data, an actual drag on the ticket?
I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, you'd have to say compared to who, and then we'd have to, you know, I understand everything that you're saying about Nancy Pelosi, but the comment that the vice presidency is a weird job, I mean, everybody knows that's true, right? And the second thing is, anytime you're in the job and you're sort of interviewing for the next job up, and there's some shiny new applicant who comes in, that shiny new applicant gets to say, like, oh, yes, like, I have these visions and dreams, and I'm going to do this better. And the person in the job can only say, well, you all know me. I'm a hard worker, and I'm conscientious. And you're at a disadvantage sometimes by being in the position. Mm. And so I feel a little bit like it's easy to dream up some person and say, that person would get us an extra 2%. That's 2% is not happening on who the vice president is.
But Alex, it's not really a question about Kamala Harris. As you alluded to, it's a question about Joe Biden. And even his strongest supporters need to admit that he's lost a step or several over the last years. If you watch the video of his news conference in Vietnam a week or so ago, if you watch some of his stumbles now and again, if one of those takes place on a debate stage next fall, that could be absolutely devastating. And it's easy to understand how a Democratic loyalist like Nancy Pelosi might be worried that the wrong moment at the wrong time could be a real problem.
which is why I don't think there is going to be a debate next fall. I think Trump and Biden both have reasons not to do it. But that's just me. So because of everything you just said, 67% of Democrats would like to see somebody else.
But they don't have anyone.
Well, they do have Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is running, who joined us last week on The Issue Is, and didn't necessarily show a lot of party loyalty in this moment.
If the final choice is Trump versus Biden, right now you're undecided?
If it's Trump, I don't have a plan B. I intend to win this election, and I'm not going to talk about what I'm going to do if that doesn't happen.
Which, of course, leaves over the possibility of running as a third party or potentially endorsing Donald Trump. What do you make of RFK Jr. and what he's doing right now?
I don't know how to answer that. What I can say is that I don't think that this is going to affect the general election in November of 2024.
Even if he runs as a third party.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Unlike if you told me Nancy Pelosi was going to run, we'd have to have a long conversation. But this is not that, and so I'm not worried about it affecting the outcome of 2024.
If I were running Joe Biden's reelection campaign, which I am not, and you told me that I had to have two Democratic primary opponents, and I could pick them, rather than Gavin Newsom or Gretchen Whitmer or Pete Buttigieg, I think I'd pick RFK Jr. and Marianne Williamson just to remind rank-and-file Democrats that actually they've got it pretty good.
And as far as you see it, do you both think that Joe Biden is the nominee on Election Day in 2024?
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, can you imagine scenarios where that isn't what happens? Yes. But again, if we're betting money, I'm betting on yes. Biden is the nominee.
Joe Biden has 6 months. In the next 6 months, if he were to decide not to run for reelection for reasons having to do with age or health or Hunter, then there's a full schedule of Democratic primaries, 10, 15, 20 candidates, and the nominee who emerges is battle-tested and presumably ready for a general election. If he waits more than 6 months, and it's March, April, May, then Vice President Harris becomes the de facto nominee. So the pressure on him between now and the end of the year to think about this is going to be excruciating.
Which is not 6 months. It's like 3 months.
Yeah.
Well, February is when you...
Okay,
And you're calling this election potentially the felon versus the fossil.
Yes.
Wow.
Donald Trump versus Joe Biden.
In fact, I did.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here. Our thanks to Dan and to Lynn and to you for listening. Next week, we will have our special coverage from the Republican convention and from the Republican debate. Who knows? We could end up talking to all the candidates or none. We'll find out next week, but I think it's going to be one of our bigger shows. And then in 2 weeks, a really big show, Nancy Pelosi sitting down for an exclusive and extensive interview on The Issue Is. Really excited about that. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Hope you'll like us, review us, tell people about us, and we'll see you next time for more of The Issue Is.